did the last one again.
Good. We're set. Call the Senate Committee on Taxes to order. Members, welcome. Majority Leader has expressed an interest in us trying to start on time, so I observe that he's not here this morning at our first committee meeting.
Not nice,
but welcome, everybody, for surviving an election, and those of you that came over from the House, welcome. We'll have a little work to do with you. I think when I came here, they called it, you have to go through a housebroken process. Somebody from across the street, a Republican member, actually told me one time that she just loved when I started to tell a story. So I'm going to, first thing I'm going to do is tell you a story of kind of how I arrived here, I guess. When I was elected in 1994 to the House, my predecessor, Representative Battaglia, shortly after the election, they had a retirement party for him in Two Harbors. And so he got up to give me advice and about 70, 80 people in the room some advice on what my path should look like at the legislature. And at the time, our senator was Senator Doug Johnson, who chaired this committee for over 20 years. And Battaglia got up and said, now he said, Bach, he said, now when you get down there to the legislature, he said, don't you go following the footsteps of that Johnson, he said, and get on that tax committee. He said, you get on one of those finance committees. He said, the mail is much better. I did notice already I'm getting email from all over the state, and most of it is not favorable so far. But anyway, thank you all. Senator Ortman, welcome to the lead position on the committee for the Republican caucus.
Thank you very much.
I think maybe we will start with some staff introductions, and then we'll have some member introductions. We actually have a bill that we're going to process here today. I can find my staff list. Is this what we're working on? Okay. Okay. Staff for the Tax Committee, Joanne Zoff. Joanne, many of you have met Joanne. She's the Director of Senate Counsel. Jack Paulson.
We have Jack.
She did.
Jack works down at Senate Counsel. Susan Von Mosch. There's Susan over there. Michelle Allen, Senate Counsel. M.J. Hedstrom, we have M.J.'s back here. M.J. works as a fiscal analyst for the committee. Chris Rundquist is the committee administrator, and if you can't talk to me and you're talking to Chris, that's about as close as you're going to get to talking to me if I'm not in the building. Julie Albright is our legislative assistant for myself and for the committee. Todd. Is Todd Olson here?
He's not here. He's not here.
Todd Olson is the legislative assistant for the property tax division that Senator Skoy chairs. Krista Rampaport? Is Krista here?
Back there.
Back here, okay. She works for the Senate Majority Caucus as a researcher. Dan Mickelberg, researcher for the Senate Majority Caucus. And Beth Cadoon. Is Beth, is Beth out there somewhere? We'll get another opportunity to meet Beth. Beth Cadoon works for the governor's office. So now, members, I think let's, for the people maybe watching on television and for the benefit of the people in the audience, let's have some introductions from you as members of the committee, and let's start with Senator Seaman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Katie Seaman. I am a newly elected senator. I came over from the House where I served for two terms, and I represent District 57. I live in Cottage Grove, and the district also includes Hastings, Afton, Newport, St. Paul Park, South St. Paul, sort of the southeast metro area. So I'm happy to be here.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Debbie Johnson, Senate District 49, Hamlake, Andover, Coon Rapids, my third term, also my third term on the Tax Committee. I look forward to working with new Chair Bach. I think it's interesting the makeup both in the House and Senate. Doug Johnson would be proud of you. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Good morning, Mr. Chair. My name is Julianne Ortman. I'm the state senator from Carver County with a little bit of Scott County in my district as well. The big cities are Chanhassen, Chaska, Victoria, Conia, Watertown. It's a very interesting district. It's got some suburban cities, but it's also got some rural cities in it, and I think of it as a microcosm of the state's economy right there in Carver County. It's a pretty good indicator of how things are going across the state, how they're going across the county. I was a county commissioner before being a state senator. It's a pleasure to be in the Tax Committee. I can honestly say that for the last 4 years, it was my favorite committee, bar none. Difficult days, difficult moments to be sure, but they were well spent days and moments, and I appreciated the efforts of everybody on this committee over the last 4 years, and I welcome the new members. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair, my name is Dan Larson, and I'm the state senator for District 63, which includes Northeast and Central Bloomington, which is the portion that I live in, the entire city of Richfield, and a portion of Southwest Minneapolis. And I'm delighted to be on the Tax Committee and look forward to working with all of you.
Welcome. And I'm Senator Tom Bach. I'm the chair of the Senate Tax Committee. I was elected to the legislature in 1994, spent 8 years in the House before coming to the Senate in 2002, represent a large portion of the Arrowhead region in Minnesota. About 14,000 people in Duluth, and all of the north shore of Lake Superior and kind of the north and east part of the Iron Range.
You want staff?
Or? Did staff.
Oh, okay. Yeah, State Senator Keith Langsett, I first came to the legislature 32 years ago, first in the House, and this is my 27th year in the Senate. I've never been on the Tax Committee. I've always been interested in this end of it, but I've never actually served on the committee. I represent the Moorhead area in northwestern Minnesota, Detroit Lakes, Breckenridge, Wheaton, in that area.
I'm John Marty, represent seven suburbs north of St. Paul, and this is my 21st year in the Senate, and it's nice to see some new members of the Tax Committee after many years.
And I'm Mee Moore. I represent Senate District 67, which is the east side of St. Paul. I'm glad that I'm back, and I'm glad to be on the Tax Committee.
I'm Rod Skoy, State Senator from District 2, which is in northern Minnesota. I served on the Tax Committee the last 4 years. And my favorite thought about the Tax Committee was expressed by Representative Ron Abrams when he was chairing it. In the Tax Committee, the buck stops here. We do a lot of good work and really look forward to this session. I'm also looking forward to chairing the Property Tax Division. We've got a lot of work to do, and looking forward to your input and working on these important issues with all of you.
Dave Sunjum, I represent 50,000 people on the north side of Rochester. In addition to that, north and western Olmsted County and all of Dodge County. I served as a city council member in Rochester for 11 years and was always interested in the tax process and how we got to where we, you know, would eventually get. And so it's kind of going to be fun to be here.
Larry Pogemiller, and I represent an area of Minneapolis.
Thank you, members. Most of the work of this committee is going to be to assemble an omnibus bill that somewhere late in the session we'll send to the floor of the Senate. That's going to have to raise about $32-33 billion of money for the next two-year budget cycle of the state. That'll be the primary work of the committee. What's in that bill, very few bills that come in front of us will travel on their own. Most things will be laid over for possible inclusion in the committee's omnibus bill. My goal is that we work in as cooperative a way as a committee and as bipartisan a way as we can. I don't expect that I'm going to ask for one roll call vote this session. And if other members feel like they have to, I guess I'd kind of discourage that. You're certainly welcome to do that. But I think I saw or heard about in the House on what I thought was going to be a simple little bill providing some tax relief for people that have students in college, and I come to find out that the bill that's going to be in front of us today had to have a roll call vote in the House Tax Committee on Monday, and I don't quite understand why we have to do that. Especially here in the Senate, our election is 4 years away. We shouldn't have to trap people on votes. Nobody's going to remember a vote that we take this session, I don't think, in an election 4 years from now. So I'd like to avoid that. I think that adds to some of the discourse I think that the public is a little bit disappointed with. My door to my office is always open to the members of this committee anytime. I'm probably here as many hours in a day as anybody else, maybe outside of the majority leader's office. Welcome the opportunity to visit with anybody. And if members have a request of something they'd like the committee to overview, I don't plan on much committee time to overview issues. All the members here have been members of the legislature previously. But if there's some subject area that you'd like to have the committee spend a little bit of time on to overview, if you can let Chris Rundquist know that in the next few days, we'll try to work something in early before we get into the major committee work and do an overview in an area that you're interested in. Any questions of any members of the committee before we introduce some more people? We have with us today the commissioner, what do we call him? He's not really the commissioner yet, but... The yet to be confirmed Commissioner of Revenue, Commissioner Innes. Ward, why don't you come up and share a few observations with the committee?
Well, thanks, Chairman, for having Department of Revenue here today. And before I introduce the starting lineup for Team Revenue, I just wanted to pass along some words the governor said on Friday. In fact, he wanted me to personally thank you and the majority leader for agreeing to expedite this particular piece of legislation. By passing this early in session, you know, we're going to minimize taxpayer confusion, taxpayer complexity, taxpayer inconvenience for about 175,000 filers. And so we really appreciate you guys fast-tracking this so our team can start working on the forms and updating the instructions and doing all the kind of nuts and bolts things that are necessary to get this out the door. So appreciate that. I'd like to introduce kind of our starting lineup and probably the folks you'll be seeing the most often in this room. And I'll start with Assistant Commissioner Jack Manson. His portfolio is broad and deep, but primarily for the next 4 to 5 months, you'll see him in here. His primary responsibility will be legislative affairs until the end of session. The person that he'll work very closely with is Linda Mosier in the back here. She's our legislative liaison. If Jack and I aren't available, we can't be reached. She is the best alternative. She'll get the information to us. Great resource from the department. She interacts with everybody at the department, and we're interacting with you guys. We got Assistant Commissioner Carol Wald. She will not be a regular participant in this committee, but she has a keen interest in legislation before you today because it will be her team and her divisions that will be responsible for getting this all ramped up and out the door. So she's here to keep an eye on that process. We got Dr. Paul Wilson here. He's head of our research department. So when we have revenue estimates, number questions, he's the guy that runs that shop. We got John Haugen. He's our income tax. We call him an income tax guru at the department. I think he's going to be the one walking through the bill today and the provisions. Incredible amount of expertise in the income tax area. So if you have any questions regarding income tax, he's the guy. Am I missing anybody? Yeah. And inside your folder, too, there's a roster, a Department of Revenue roster, which kind of shows our key players and lines them up to what their expertise is, what tax type they cover. So if there's any questions at all about a certain tax type, I think refer to that roster. And if you can't get hold of me and Jack or Linda, I'd give one of those folks a call, and they'll be more than happy to help you.
Thank you, Commissioner.
You know, the only other thing I would add is that, you know, I've worked with a lot of you over the years in different capacities, not the business partnership with Dwayne Benson or when I was in the minority Senate when Doug Johnson was the chair. And so a lot of us have crossed paths in the past. A lot of the staff, Joanne Selner was a mentor. I remember my first day in the Senate as a minority staffer, And I didn't know the difference between a deduction and an exemption. And and she was great. She's a great mentor for me. So our staff have always worked very well together. The department is going to be very helpful. If you guys have any questions at all about issues, we're here to help. We're here to assist. And at the end of the day, Chairman, we want the best final product out of that omnibus bill as you do, and one that really suits the state as a whole and is geographically balanced and is fair to the taxpayers. So we're here to help. We're here to assist. And I'm sure we'll have just a difference of opinion here and there. But all in all, I'm sure it will be a good working relationship.
Thank you. Mr. Manson, any comments about the department? Or you're the guy we're going to see in the room more often than anybody else, probably. We've been joined by Senator Limmer. Senator Limmer, welcome to the Tax Committee. Tell us what area you represent, maybe how long you've been here.
Well, I represent the folks in Northwest Hennepin County and about 300 homes in Wright County, in the little town of Hanover and Dayton. And our area is basically a northwest segment of Hennepin County, and have been on the Tax Committee for about 6 years. And looking forward to the next four.
Thank you. I believe we'll take up Senate File 17. Members, you have it in your packet. It's a bill that is authored by myself and Senator Sendrum that does a federal update of, I believe it was three different bills that were passed late in the congressional session that have some impact on tax filers here in Minnesota when they file their Minnesota tax returns. So there is some urgency to pass this, get it into law, so that people aren't faced with it later on in the session filing an amended Minnesota tax return if we were to do these updates later in the session. So, Mr. Haugen, why don't you come up and kind of walk through for us why we need to do Senate File 17. And
you want to come up, Jack? I think I'm John Haugen from the Department of Revenue. I think Assistant Commissioner Manson has some thing to say first before we actually get into the nuts and bolts of this bill.
Mr. Chairman, Jack Manson with the Department of Revenue, and usually it's your prerogative how you want to go, but since John invited me up here. But anyway, I just want to make a couple of comments before John runs through all the detail. But you'll see the bill, if you look at the bill itself, it looks like a very simple bill, but it does solve a lot of problems for our taxpayers. And in your handout, there is a new form we designed for this year. It's the M1NC. It's a two-page form, and then there's about three pages of instructions with that. And that's what the taxpayers would have to go through if they file before passage of this bill. And as you can see, it's very complicated, causes headaches for our taxpayers, our tax preparers. And another group that we sometimes overlook is the software developers. And we rely very heavily on them for our e-filing system, which about 70% of our people use. And those people are now struggling with developing that system, and they want to get it up by actually January 12th is their target date. And so they're working with all the states and trying to conform the federal legislation to the new law. So it's very complicated for them. And they're hoping that early passage would prevent them from doing a lot of work and then having to undo that as soon as it got passed or when it got passed. So, and it directly impacts about, there's two main provisions. One is the higher ed tuition expense subtraction, which impacts about 110,000 taxpayers. And then there's the teacher's expenses in the classroom, which is about another 60,000 taxpayers. So as the commissioner mentioned, it is about 170,000 taxpayers directly impacted. But one thing you should keep in mind is, even though you're not directly impacted, if you're a paper filer, you've got to go through this form, and does this impact me, you know? And it complicates it for those folks. And even e-filers have to be asked questions about, you know, are you a teacher? Did you have expenses? Are you over 70 and a half? Did you have higher ed tuition? So it complicates the system for everyone, all 2 million plus filers. So that is one thing to keep in mind. And it does get very complicated. It requires actually requires almost recalculation of your federal return for Minnesota purposes. So you have to actually, as complicated as the federal return is, you'd have to do it twice. And also where it gets very complicated is that it can impact your federal adjusted gross income. And when that changes, a lot of your other items in your return change too. Like if you itemize deductions, your medical expenses that you can deduct are contingent on your amount of your FAGI. You can only deduct over 7% of your FAGI, so that's impacted. Charitable contributions are impacted. Your total itemized deductions are impacted. So a lot of those are contingent on your FAGI, so it all gets very complicated. It also impacts the working family credit and some of those other credits, dependent care credit, that are also tied to FAGI. So needless to say, I mean, this is very complicated. And early passage, why that's so important is that it really minimizes the impact on the taxpayers. We can withdraw this form right away and just instruct people that, you know, to ignore anything you've seen, ignore the man behind the curtain kind of thing. And then tell our software developers, you know, don't adjust your programs. We're going to pass this early, or this has been passed early. And so by early passage, you really minimize the taxpayers who have gone through all this complication, made the adjustments, and then if they've filed and made the adjustments and then you pass it, then they've got to amend their returns and even maybe pay more to a preparer too to file that amended return for them. So it's very complicated, and early passage would be very important for our taxpayers, tax preparers, software developers, and, of course, us as well. So I thank you for giving this early consideration. It's very important. With that, John can run through all the provisions, and you'll get a little better feel for how complicated all this stuff is. And
basically, Minnesota law right now says that we pick up the net income for Minnesota purposes as federal taxable income as determined by the Internal Revenue Code as amended through a May date in 2006. Since that date, federally, they've passed three bills, as was mentioned earlier, that have an impact on federal taxable income. Technically, right now, we don't pick up those changes. So if you had one of these, in these three bills, there were about 30 items that affect taxable income. Of those 30 items, 16 of them are retroactive, basically back to 2006. So the forms that people are filing in 2007 will be impacted by this. Technically, if we don't do an update, people would have to adjust their federal taxable income to make modifications for all these things that we haven't picked up. We have, as Jack mentioned, the Schedulist NC, nonconformity schedule, that more or less isolates these federal items and bleeds you through so that you basically recompute your federal taxable income using the old code, and then you have an addition or subtraction that you put on your Minnesota return. Most of these items, they aren't very much money for any one taxpayer, but some of them, the cumulative effect, have a fairly significant revenue impact. And so what the proposal is, this bill is, we would be picking up the federal changes that were made in these three bills that are effective for 2006. For 2007, if you did nothing else, in effect, we'd be back to where we work, because this is just a one-year-only type of legislation. So it's just for 2006. It's just these 16 items that were enacted federally that were effective for 2006, and they have varying revenue impacts. The two biggest ones in terms of people, as Jack mentioned, were the one for teachers, where they were extending the ability of a teacher to deduct $250 per teacher on their return above the line instead of taking it as an itemized deduction. Basically, for any one teacher, that might be, if they weren't allowed this for Minnesota, which current law would say that they aren't, it would be somewhere between a $15 and $20 impact on their tax. They'd be paying $20 more for Minnesota than they were would have if you enact this legislation. The other one deals with people who have children in college or are going to college themselves. There's an above-the-line deduction for tuition and room and board, their qualifying educational, higher educational expenses. For people who are under $65,000 of FAGI, they can deduct up to $4,000 of these types of expenses. It's double that for married filing joint. If you're over 65 but under 80,000, if I remember correctly, you can deduct $2,000. If you're over the 80 and the 160,000 for married filing joint, this deduction doesn't do anything for you. So it is sort of a middle income taxpayer program that they're federally extending. For Minnesota, if we don't adopt it, they wouldn't get those deductions. If you take $4,000 times 7%, well, you're looking at $280 of additional tax that these people would have to be applying. There are a bunch of other provisions dealing with charitable contributions. The one that's probably the most interesting is if you are over 70 and a half and you have an IRA, you're required to take distributions. Under the old federal law, you take a distribution no matter what you use the money for, that's taxable income to you. Under this new federal law, what they say is you can take up to $100,000 of your IRA, transfer it to a charity. Instead of getting a charitable deduction, that $100,000 doesn't go into your taxable income. So your FAGI is going to be lower. For these people who are over 70 and a half, most of them are getting Social Security. If they took, let's say, $50,000 out, that would increase their FAGI. It would mean that more of their Social Security would be subject to tax. And all of those computations would have to be done by Minnesota. They would get a charitable deduction on the Minnesota end that they aren't getting for federal, but it would cause a complication. They would have, in a lot of cases, more taxable income because of this if we didn't adopt this. Those are the three main changes. There were a bunch of other ones dealing with charitable contributions, limits on, for instance, when you give used personal property that you use in your house. The new federal law says that property has to be in what's called used good condition. I'm not sure exactly what that is. But if it's not in used good condition, you aren't going to be able to deduct anything, whereas under the old law, you would have been able to deduct the fair market value. So, for instance, if you gave a bunch of underwear or socks, in the old days, you might have said, okay, these socks are worth a dime a pair. The underwear may be 50 cents, I don't know, depending on how good the underwear was. And some people maybe jack that up to a buck, so if you give a lot of it, it actually adds up to some money. Now, federally, I think the idea is you give stuff like that, you aren't going to get any charitable deduction for it. You know, I've got a sofa that I use in the house down in the basement. I could probably give it to Savers, and they'd sell it for $6. You know, I could maybe say that it's worth $100. I don't know what a used sofa is worth. But anyway, if it's not in good use condition, you aren't going to be able to get a charitable deduction for it. There were a bunch of where they tightened up. There were some where they were actually making it more advantageous. One of the provisions that where they were making it more advantageous, if you give a conservation easement to a charity or to a government, typically you were limited. The maximum amount of deduction you could take in a year was limited to 30% of your FAGI if you were giving a conservation easement. For other types of things, you usually could give up to 50%. What they did in this bill, for most people, they were saying that 30% limit goes to 50%, so you can actually deduct a bigger charitable contribution for conservation easements. For farmers and ranchers, the 50% actually went up to 100%, so you could wipe out all your taxable income with a conservation easement. So there was good and bad as far as the charitable. There were a number of things dealing with pension plans and IRAs. Those predominantly aren't effective until 2007, therefore they aren't impacted by what you'd be doing here today. There were some dealing with business, there are very few provisions dealing with businesses depreciating things and expensing things. More or less, if you had restaurant property or leasehold improvement property, typically the old law would have said you had to depreciate those over 39 years. Federally, they put in a provision a couple years ago saying that you could use 15 years instead of the 39. That was extended federally for 2006 and 2007. This would extend it for us for 2006. So basically, that's the bill. You've got the revenue estimates that has some other provisions that are discussed that are in the federal bill. And if you have any questions, I'd be more than happy to try to answer them.
Mr. Chairman, we'll try and work on better examples when we talk about the 2007.
Because is that the revenue raiser in the bill, the nickel underwear?
That is one of them. The other one deals with people who are donating, I don't know, stuffed or mounted animals to these wildlife museums. In the past, you saw some fairly hefty appraisals of what the fair market value of some of these, like a stuffed elk or an elk's head or a bear or a lion or whatever. You'd see some fairly large dollar amounts being deducted for the fair market value of those. The federal law more or less limits that now to the cost. It's the fair market, the larger of the fair market or the smaller of the fair market value, or the cost of mounting and stuffing the animal. So they were trying to put a little bit of a curb on those, and that actually raised some money as well in the charitable contribution deduction area.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Hogan, tell me about the HEROES Earned Retirement Opportunities provision.
The HEROES, that's rather a minor provision. That one deals with people who are in a combat zone, and let's say that all of their pay was from combat. That is, for regular tax purposes, and excuse me, an alternative minimum, for all tax purposes, it's tax exempt. You don't pay any tax on it. If you wanted to make an IRA contribution that was deductible, you have to have what's called earned income. And the old definition of earned income said that it had to have been taxable income. So the combat pay didn't qualify you to make a tax-deductible IRA contribution. This new federal law, which is retroactive back to 2004, says that your tax-exempt combat pay, you can use that as earned income to more or less generate and fund a tax-deductible IRA contribution.
Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I had a question. When you were talking of the changes in deductibility of personal goods and not recognizing a value as we had in the past, what kind of consequence is going to occur as a result of that? Could we realistically expect that donations may begin to decrease and that there won't be a ready supply that could trip into where that money goes? A lot of that money goes to charitable purposes anyway. And if that is the case, especially in a sluggish economy, is the state going to have to pick up that difference anyway?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Limmer, I'm not so, you know, since they're only talking about property that's not in what quote-unquote used good condition is, I'm not so sure that it's going to impact a lot of the donations to charity. You know, a lot of the stuff that's not in good use condition, you're going to give it to charity anyway because you don't want it any longer. And it's a good place to get rid of it. So they're going to get those things anyway. It's just that you aren't going to get a charitable deduction for it.
Senator Marty.
Mr. Chair and Senator Glimmer, on that point, a lot of the nonprofits spend a lot of their money dumping stuff that people take tax deductions for because it's not worth anything to them. And actually, if they had fewer of those donations, it would be a plus for them because they spend a lot of money on dumping stuff that they didn't want.
You know, Mr. Chair, I remember headlines a few years ago that the President Clinton and his wife were donating their underwear for charitable purposes. Do you remember that?
It's not legal.
No. You don't remember that? No. I'll bring the headlines in.
It's not legal to do that. Why are we keeping
it? We have one technical amendment. What's the number of it? It's the A1 amendment. Mr. Manson, the A1 amendment, or Mr. Hogan?
This is an amendment, and what it does is we have a deduction for people who don't itemize deductions but make charitable contributions. This provision deals with the people who are 70 and a half and they're getting a tax redistribution from their IRA and giving it to a charity. They're actually getting the benefit at the federal and state level if you enact this because their FAGI goes down. What we're more or less doing with this amendment is saying that that amounts of money that went to the charity that you in effect got a deduction for, you aren't going to be able to use that to claim the Minnesota standalone non-itemizer charitable subtraction computation. So, for instance, if you transferred $50,000 out of the IRA to charity, you didn't itemize deductions, and you had, let's say, another $1,000, $2,000 that you gave to church, you could use the amounts that you gave to the church to get the non-itemizer deduction, but you couldn't use the $50,000 that you transferred from the IRA that you already got your tax break on. And that's what this amendment does. It clarifies that you can't double up on the benefit.
Senator Larson moves the A1 amendment. Any questions? All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion prevails. The A1 amendment is adopted. Anybody else from the committee? Any comments on Senate File 17 as amended? Moves that Senate File 17 as amended be recommended to pass and sent to the floor. Discussion? All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Contrary, no. Motion prevails. That concludes our work. This is some spending of the one-time, Senator Pogomiller, I think we just spent some of the one-time surplus money.
Mr. Chair.
About $24 million of tax relief for Minnesota citizens. Senator Skoy, do you want to make any comment before we adjourn about your property tax division? Or?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. The only thing I would say is Senator Bach has a committee scheduled for examining the trends in property taxes in Minnesota in a week or two, I think. After that committee hearing, the property tax division is going to start meeting probably once a week for a number of weeks examining some of the issues. We're going to look at some of the government aids. We're going to look at school equalization a little bit, some of the other issues that are affecting property taxes. Hopefully we'll wrap that up by the end of February and forward the work we've done to the full committee.
Thank you. Members, if you have any local bills, it would be helpful if we get them in here so that we can hear them by, you know, let's say mid-March or something, so that we can kind of focus after that all of our time on budget issues. So if you have some local stuff, try to encourage whoever your respective local government bodies or wherever they're being initiated to get them to us so that we can get them heard. I was remiss in mentioning one person that works for our committee. Bill Lunzer back here is our committee page. He is officed next door to me with MJ Hedstrom and Chris Rundquist in room 228. Anything else? Any members of the committee? If not, thank you all. We're going to meet once next week. I don't think a notice has gone out yet. I'm not sure which day, but we'll be meeting one day next week. Committee's adjourned.
Welcome to Texas after. I want to tell you.